Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars Rogue Squadron, X-Wing Book 1 by Michael Stackpole. You're good, Corrin, but you're no Luke Skywalker. Corrin Horn's cheeks still burned at the memory of Commander Antilles' evaluation of his last simulator exercise. The line was not meant to be cruel, but it cut deep. I've never tried to suggest I'm that good a pilot, Corrin thought. He shook his head. No, you just wanted it to be easily recognized by everyone around you. He flicked the starter switches for the X-Wing simulator's engines. Green One has four starts and is go. Oral Quirg, his Gand wingman, reports.
Green Two is operational.
Green Three and Four checked in. Then the external screens came alive, projecting an empty starfield. Whistler, have you finished the navigation calculations? The green and white R2 units seated behind Corrin hooted. Then the nav data spilled out over Corrin's main monitor. Jump to hyperspace and rendezvous on the Redemption. Every pilot dreaded the Redemption run. The scenario was based on an Imperial attack on evacuation ships back before the first Death Star had been destroyed, while the Alliance ship, the Redemption, waited for three medevac shuttles and the corvette Korolev to dock and offload wounded. The Imperial frigate Warspite danced around and dumped TIE fighters and added bombers to the mix to do as much damage as they could. The bombers, with a full load of missiles, could do a lot of damage. The Warspite would only deploy four starfighters and a half dozen bombers, known in pilot slang as eyeballs and dupes respectively. But it would do so in a pattern that made it all but impossible for the New Republic pilots to save the Corellum. Stellar pinpoints elongated as Corrin's X-Wing fighter came out of hyperspace, and the first shuttle began its docking maneuver with the Redemption.
Green One, Green Four.
Go ahead, Four.
By the book, are we doing something fast?
Corrin hesitated. By book, Nawara Venn, the Green Four pilot, referred to the general wisdom about the scenario. That one pilot should race out to engage the first TIE flight, while the other three fighters remained as backup. As long as three fighters stayed at home, the Warspite dropped ships off at a considerable distance from the Korolev. When they didn't, it got bolder, and the whole scenario became very bloody. The problem with going by the book was that one pilot had to deal with five TIEs. Two eyeballs and three dupes, all by himself, then turn around and engage five more. The chances of being able to succeed against those odds were slim. But what loyal son of Corellia ever had any use for odds?
By the book, Corrin replied. Keep the home fires burning and pick up after me.
Done. Good luck.
Corrin reached up and pressed the lucky charm he wore on a chain around his neck. It worked for you, Dad. Let's hope its luck hasn't run out yet. The Warspite had arrived. Corrin brought the X-Wing into a wide turn and locked the S-foils into attack position as he flew out toward the Warspite.
Green One engaged.
Whistler announced the appearance of three TIE bombers, then brought the sound up as two TIE fighters joined them.
Whistler, tag the bombers as targets 1, 2, and 3.
As the R2 unit complied with that order, Corrin pushed shield power full to front and brought his laser targeting program up on the main monitor. With his left hand, he adjusted the sighting calibration knob on the stick and got the two fighters. Corrin took a deep breath, exhaled slowly, then let his thumb hover over the firing button. At two clicks, the display on Corrin's control panel painted a yellow box around the lead TIE fighter. The box went green as the fighter's image locked into the HUD's targeting cross. Corrin hit the button, sending out three bursts of laser bolts. The first missed, but the second and third blasted through the cockpit. The hexagonal solar panel snapped off and spun through space while the ion engines exploded in a ball of incandescent gas.
Korin sliced through the center of the explosion. Laser fire from the second fighter lit up his forward shields, making it impossible for him to get a good visual line on the Tai. He hurried a shot and knew he hit, but the Tai flashed past and continued on toward the Korolev. Korin throttled back almost to zero. As he let the X-Wing decelerate, he heard Ural's voice.
Green 1, your velocity is down to 1%. Do you need help?
Negative, Green 2.
Korin, what are you doing?
Making the book a short story. I hope. Numbers scrolled away to zero as his missiles streaked in at their targets. One shredded the first TIE bomber. Seconds later, a Nova-like explosion lit the simulator's cockpit as the second missile hit its target. Pushing his throttle to full, Korin scanned for the third bomber. He found it going in toward the Korolev. He also found five more TIEs coming in from the other side of the Corvette. Korin fired a missile and watched it blast through the remaining fighter, then turned his attention to the new TIE. He'd have just over a minute to deal with the bombers before they were in firing range on the Korolev. Flicking two switches, he redirected energy from the shields and lasers into the engine.
Green 1, the warspite has exited hyperspace. Are we released to engage fighters?
Affirmative 3, go get them. Korin frowned for a second, knowing his fellow pilots would make short work of the TIE fighters. They would deny him a clean sweep, but he'd willingly trade hitting the two TIEs for protecting the Corvette. Whistler, mark the bombers 4, 5, and 6. Acquire target 4. Korin centered the targeting box on the first of the dupes and fired a missile. Acquire 5. Acquire 6. Korin looked down at his display. Green 2, report. Nowara and Green 4 responded.
He's gone, one.
Whistler, acquire 6, but the last bomber was bearing in on the Korolev. The pilot had the wide-bodied craft slowly spinning, making it a difficult target for a missile lock. Korin switched back to lasers and pushed his X-Wing forward. Two blasts caused the TIE bomber to shy a bit, but just as Korin aimed again, the bomber jinked and cut away to port. The Corellian's eyes narrowed. Roar Jace has got to be flying that thing. Jace, a human from Typhara, was, in Korin's opinion, the second-best pilot in the training squadron. Korin pulled all his shield energy forward and left his aft as naked as a shieldless TIE bomber. Following Jace through a barrel roll, he triggered a snapshot. It caught a piece of one wing, but Jace dove beneath the X-Wing's line of fire. Korin followed the other pilot's dive, but because Korin's X-Wing's rate of speed was a good 20% faster, it moved into a broad loop. By the time he finished the turnoff, the bomber came back up and banked in on the X-Wing's tail. Before it could unload a missile, Korin broke the fighter hard to port and carved across the bomber's line of fire. Jace responded by bringing the nose of the bomber up in a steep climb. He leveled off, then shrieked in at the X-Wing. Korin knew that Jace would be happy to smoke him before taking the Korolev. He hit a switch and shifted all power to the aft shield. The TIE bomber should have punched through the shield and might even have destroyed the fighter, but it hit at an angle and glanced off. The starboard wing of the unshielded bomber buckled at the impact with the X-Wing's shield, crumpling inward around the bomber's cockpit. The bomber shot into an uncontrolled tumble through the simulator status bar. Green 3, did you copy that? 3 had been shot down. The image of a lone TIE fighter making a strafing run on the Korolev appeared on Korin's monitor. The clumsy little craft skittered over the Corvette's surface, easily dodging its weak return fire. That's seriously gutsy for a TIE fighter. Or arrogant. Time to make him pay for that arrogance. The Corellian brought his proton torpedo targeting program up and locked onto the fighter. The missile shot straight in, but the pilot broke hard to port and away, causing the missile to overshoot the target. Korin brought his X-Wing over and started down to loop in behind the TIE, but as he did so, the TIE vanished from his forward screen and reappeared in his aft arc. A laser jolted a tremor through the simulator's couch. Jinking the X-Wing right and left, Korin avoided shots coming in from behind. Who's in the fighter, he wondered. He knew Jace had been in the bomber. He was the only pilot in the unit who could have stayed with him. Except for our leader, Korin smiled. Coming to see how good I really am, Commander Antilles? He yanked the fighter's nose away from the original line of flight. The TIE stayed with him, then tightened up to close the distance. Korin put the fighter through a twisting roll that ate up enough time to bring him into the TIE's rear. He centered his foe in the crosshairs and waited for a dead shot. The TIE juked in and out of the center. The TIE started firing at maximum range and scored hits. At that distance, the laser did no real damage against the shield, prompting Korin to wonder why Wedge was wasting the energy. Then, As his HUD's green color started to flicker, realization dawned. The bright bursts on the shields are distracting my targeting. I'd better kill him now. Korn tightened down on the trigger button, sending red laser needles stabbing out at the fighter. He couldn't tell if he had hit anything. Lights flashed in the cockpit, and Whistler started screeching furiously. Korn's main monitor went black. His shields were down, and his weapon controls were dead. He looked left and right. Where is he, Whistler? Suddenly, the starfield went black, and the simulator pod hissed as it cracked open. The canopy lifted up, and the sound of laughter filled the cockpit. Doffing his helmet, Korn hoped his three friends wouldn't notice his embarrassed blush. At least it's over, he said. The Twi'lek, Nawara Venn, clapped his hands. Such modesty, Korn. Huh? Rosati, the blonde woman beside him, beamed. She had been Green 3. You won the redemption scenario, she said. The gray-green Gand nodded. You had 7 kills. Jace is not pleased. A brown-haired man with crystal-blue eyes shouldered his way between Ural and Nawara. You're an exceptionally good pilot. Thank you, sir. The man offered Korn his hand. Thought I had you, but when you shot out my engines, your missile caught up with me. Nice job. Korn shook the man's hand hesitantly. The man wore a black flight suit with no name or rank insignia on it, though it did have Hoth, Indor, and Bakura battle tabs sewn on the left sleeve. You know, you're one hot hand in a tie. Nice of you to say, Mr. Horn. I'm a bit rusty, but I really enjoyed this run. A woman wearing a lieutenant's uniform touched the TIE pilot on the arm. Admiral Akbar is ready to see you now, sir, if you will follow me. Mystified, Korn stared at the man's retreating back. I thought Commander Antilles was in that tie. It had to be someone as good as him to get you three and leave me dead in space. Rosati looped an arm around Korn's neck. What difference does it make? I want to know who he is, because he's decidedly dangerous. Wedge Antilles saluted Admiral Akbar and held the salute until the Mon Calamari returned it.
Thank you for seeing me, sir.
It's always my pleasure to see you, Commander Antilles.
Akbar glanced with one eye toward the other man standing in his office. General Salm was the human commander of the New Republic Starfighter Training Center at Folar.
General Salm and I were just discussing the impact of having Rogue Squadron back in the fleet. He feels you are all but ready to go. The unit roster is impressive.
Yes, sir. I wanted to speak to you about the roster if I could, sir. There have been changes made without my consultation.
You do not approve?
Wedge bit back a sharp comment. Admiral, I've spent a good deal of the 2 years since the Emperor died touring worlds new to the Alliance because someone decided our new allies needed to see we had heroes, that we weren't the bandits the Empire made us out to be. I gave speeches, I kissed babies, I had holographs taken with more world leaders than I ever knew existed. I was there as our propaganda machine built Rogue Squadron up into the needle that exploded the Emperor's Death Star balloons. General Salm smiled coolly. Then you do understand why it is important that our allies have representatives within our most celebrated squadron. Yes, sir, but I know the difference between a real fighter squadron and the monster you've made Rogue Squadron out to be. The Empire isn't going to lie down and die just because they see a dozen ships jump into a system.
Of course not.
But, General, that's what our diplomatic corps is suggesting. The Bothans want a pilot in Rogue Squadron because they found the second Death Star. We have 2 Typherons because we have to appease the 2 conglomerates that control Bacta production. Wedge took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Luke would be telling me that anger isn't good. He's right, because anger won't get me any closer to what I want. Admiral, I'm commanding a fighter squadron. We're an elite squadron, and the only thing I want to change about it is our survival rate. You've let me have the pick of the new pilots, and I've got a fine group of them representing many different worlds. He nodded at General Salm. But I would hope the General would see his way clear to letting me choose my own executive officer. I want Tycho Selku.
Absolutely not!
The explosion Wedge had expected from Salm did not disappoint him. Admiral Akbar, under no circumstances will I allow Selku to be anywhere near an active duty squadron. Just because he isn't in prison is no reason for me to want him in my command. Wedge's jaw shot open. Prison? The man hasn't done anything that warrants confinement. He cannot be trusted. I believe he can. General, Tycho Selku is a hero. Much more of a hero than I am. On Hoth he fought as fiercely as anyone, and at Endor he piloted an A-wing that led a bunch of TIE fighters on a merry chase through the Death Star. He took them off our backs while Lando and I went in and blew the installation's reactor. He got captured. He escaped. That's it.
That's all you want to see, Antilles.
Meaning? Somm's face hardened into a steel mask. You say he escaped.
It could be they let him go.
Akbar held up his hands.
Gentlemen, please. Commander Antilles, you must admit that General Somm's concerns are valid. Perhaps if there were a way to alleviate some of them, an accommodation could be reached.
I thought of that, sir, and I've spoken with Captain Selku about it. Wedge started ticking points off on his fingers. Tycho has agreed to fly a Z-95 headhunter in our training exercises, with the lasers powered down so they can only paint a target, not hurt it. He's agreed to have a destruct device installed in the starfighter, so that if he goes to ram anything, or goes outside space lanes to which he is assigned, he can be destroyed by remote. When not flying, he has agreed to remain under house arrest unless accompanied by Alliance security or members of the squadron. Akbar blinked.
Where is Captain Selku currently?
He should be in the simulator complex.
He's where?
Somm's face went purple as Admiral Akbar gave orders to have Selku brought to them.
The simulator complex? Admiral Akbar repeated.
It was Horn's turn leading the redemption scenario. Tycho knows how to fly a TIE better than most pilots, so I decided to have him fly against Horn. Akbar's lip fringe twitched.
You've taken certain liberties concerning Captain Selku already, it seems, Commander.
Wedge glanced down penitently. I stand corrected, sir. The door to Akbar's office opened, and a female officer led a pilot in a black flight suit into the room.
Captain Selku, Commander Antilles has told me that you have agreed to a remarkable number of restrictions on yourself and your activities. Is this true?
Tycho nodded.
Yes, sir. It's my duty. I chose to join the rebellion. Even the worst you can do to me will still be better than Imperial captivity.
The Mon Calamari picked up a datapad from his desk.
I'm signing orders to make Captain Selku the executive officer for Rogue Squadron. You're dismissed.
Yes, sir.
One last thing, Commander. What did you think about the pilots in the redemption scenario?
Wedge looked over at his commanding officer. Admiral, if the pilots I flew against are representative of the rest of the people we have to work with, Rogue Squadron should be operational within a couple of months, and the scourge of the Empire shouldn't last much longer than that. Kirtan Lur struggled to keep a self-satisfied smirk from ruining the stern expression he had worked hard to cultivate. He wanted to appear implacable. He needed to be merciless. What had been a blot on his record would soon be expunged. More importantly, people who had ridiculed him would learn they had grossly underestimated him, and in doing so they had doomed themselves. Kirtan held his head erect as he marched down the companionway on the Expeditious. The Carrick-class light cruiser had not been built to accommodate people of his height, so he felt some of his black hair brush against the ceiling. Kirtan, having once been told that he looked every inch a taller, younger Grand Moff Tarkin, from sinning widow's peak and lanky frame to sharp features and a cadaverously slender face, did his best to emphasize the resemblance. Even though Tarkin was nearly 7 years dead, the resemblance still earned him some respect, though any respect for an intelligence officer such as himself was in short supply on an Imperial naval vessel. Kirtan entered the antechamber of the Expeditious's brig and approached the lieutenant stationed outside the cells. I'm here to interview the prisoner you took off the Starwind. The lieutenant glanced at his datapad.
He just got back from medical.
I know. I've seen the report. The hatch to cell 3 opened with a hiss of pressurized gas. As Kirtan Lur entered, the older, heavy-set prisoner swung his legs off the cot and sat up.
Kirtan Lur, I thought it would be you. Actually, I rather counted on it.
The intelligence officer snorted. You thought no one but me would be able to puzzle out your whereabouts?
No, I mean I thought even you could figure out how to find me.
Narrowing his eyes, Kirtan stared down at the old man. You, Gil Bastra, are going to die.
I figured that the moment your TIE started shooting at me.
Kirtan crossed his arms. No, you don't understand. You are dying even now. Bastra's bushy gray eyebrows met in a frown.
What are you talking about?
When we took the Starwind, I ordered a medical evaluation for you. You may have forgotten how you once ridiculed me for using Skirtopanol to interrogate a smuggler working for the Rebellion. You told me that he died during interrogation because he was dosed with loteramine, which metabolizes the interrogation drug and can cause death. Kirtan gave Bastra a cold smile. Your medical scan shows elevated levels of loteramine in your blood.
I guess you'll just have to kill me the old-fashioned way, then.
Hardly. You have accelerated blastonecrosis.
What? You're lying.
No, I'm not. The loteramine is very effective in masking the tracer enzymes for the disease. The intelligence officer idly stroked his sharp chin. But there are ways to cure blastonecrosis.
Huh. And all I have to do is turn in my friends.
Looking down upon the gray lump of a man across from him, Kirtan felt momentarily embarrassed that he had once feared Gilbastra's judgment of him. Bastra had been Corellian security when Kirtan, as Imperial Intelligence, had been attached to the Corellian office. Bastra had been in charge of assigning officers to work with intelligence, and his lack of respect had been reflected through the personnel he sent to work with Kirtan. Every time Kirtan had felt in control, Bastra had managed to undercut him and shame him. Then Bastra had turned traitor. I know you fashioned new identities for yourself and Corin Horn and your confederates, and did a very good job of it, too. Now you have lost. The old man's head came up slowly. Kirtan saw fire still smoldering in the blue eyes. I'll give you nothing. You forget. I learned interrogation from a number of very good people, including yourself. I will get information from you. When I do, Corin Horn and the others will be mine. It is inevitable. Corin Horn tried to kill his smile as he entered the briefing amphitheater. Then he saw that all the other pilots who could smile were absolutely beaming. A message on his datapad that morning had informed him that after breakfast, he was to report for Rogue Squadron's first briefing. The message itself had been neutral, but it was the first official notification that he'd made it into the squadron. Corin had never been one to hold back. He'd gone into the Corellian Security Force Academy straight out of secondary school, and continued the Horn family tradition by establishing new records in the training there. One of the last marks he surpassed had been set by his father, Hal, 20 years earlier. Rizzati Ener waved Corin over to the bench where she sat. We made it! We actually made it! Corin's roommate, Ural, seated behind them, leaned forward. Ural learned your redemption run had the highest score of our training cycle. Corin flashed the Gand a big smile. He still couldn't get used to the fact that his roommate always referred to himself in the third person. But this time, he was far more interested in the message than in the way it was delivered. Who came in second?
Borjace, I bet.
The Gand shook his head. Gavin Darklighter beat Bror.
The kid beat Jace?
Corin glanced over at the brown-haired 16-year-old pilot from Tatooine, who sat talking with the black-furred Shistavan and Wolfman, Sheel. The Twi'lek, Nawara Venn, sat down next to Ural, looping one of his brain tails back over his shoulder.
Jace isn't any happier about it than he was about losing to you.
Corin looked toward the front of the room where Bror Jace stood. Tall, slender, and handsome, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Typharan pilot had an ego as big as an Imperial Star Destroyer. Corin smiled in Jace's direction and caught a return nod from the black-haired woman Jace was speaking to. Ural, how did Arisi Dallara do in the exercise?
Middle of the hunt, after Nawara Venn, and ahead of Ural.
Commander Antilles entered the room and marched down to the holographic briefing display at the front. Joining him was the mystery pilot who had flown the TIE bomber against Corin the day before, and a black 3PO protocol droid with a non-standard clamshell head. Commander Antilles began speaking.
I'd like to congratulate you on being chosen for Rogue Squadron. You all know the history of this squadron. We were given the job of killing the first Death Star. Flying the X-Wings that have become our trademark, we did it, and lost a lot of fine pilots in the process. We covered the evacuation from Hoth, fought at Gaul, and a year later at Endor, we killed another Death Star. From there, we went to Bakura and fought the Sirruk. After 7 years of non-stop fighting, the leadership of the New Republic decided to rebuild and revitalize this unit. About a year ago, Admiral Akbar presented me with plans for reforming Rogue Squadron. It had become a symbol for the Alliance. It needed to live up to its legend and become once again an elite group of pilots who could be called upon to do the sort of impossible jobs we've always managed to complete. Truth be told, most of you are already better pilots than a lot of the men and women who have died in this unit. You are an eclectic bunch. Two of you had death marks against you before you joined the Alliance, and the rest of you will earn them as soon as the Empire learns you've been assigned to this unit. Over the next month, you'll get the most intensive training you've ever had. Captain Selku will be in charge of it. Commander Antilles indicated the man beside him. Captain Selku graduated from the Imperial Naval Academy and served as a TIE pilot. He joined Rogue Squadron after his homeworld of Alderaan was destroyed. He is a superior pilot, as some of you have already learned. Wedge nodded toward the droid. Imtray is our military protocol droid. He will deal with all requisitions, duty assignments, and other administrative duties. So you're all now part of Rogue Squadron. What you can expect in the future is this. Endless amounts of boredom and routine punctuated by moments of sheer terror. As good as you are, statistical studies of fighter pilots indicate most of you will die in your first 5 missions. While survivability goes up after that, the odds are not good that you will live to see the complete destruction of the Empire. Rogue Squadron will be given tough assignments and will be expected to complete them because we are the best there is. After the meeting broke up, Nawara Venn frowned.
So, two of us are already under death marks. I wonder who.
Rizzati poked him in the ribs.
You mean you aren't, Nawara? You are a lawyer, after all. Yes, and some of my clients on Kessel would doubtlessly love to kill me, but I'm not aware of having a death mark. His red eyes narrowed. The Shistavanan is a rough customer. I could see him being wanted by the Empire.
A voice spoke up behind them.
Actually, Mr. Venn, Reef Shield does have a death mark on him. He earned it when he slew a stormtrooper team that tried to apprehend him. The black protocol droid stood over them. Forgive me for interrupting. I am Imtray, human-cyborg relations and regulations, with a military specialty. I am fluent in over 6 million languages, and am familiar with an equivalent number of current and historical military doctrines, regulations, honor codes, and protocols.
The ends of the Twi'lek's brain tails twitched.
As well as being familiar with the personnel files of everyone in the squadron?
Why, yes.
Golden lights glowed deep in the dark hollow of the droid's face.
My primary function requires me to carry such data around with me. Without it...
Nawara held a hand up.
So you could tell us who the other person is with the death mark?
I could.
Imtray's head canted at an angle.
The other death mark was issued after the brutal murder and vivisection of a half-dozen smugglers by Mr. Corin Horn.
Laughing so hard he had to hold his stomach, Corin sat down abruptly. He only partially landed on the bench and ended up on the floor at Imtray's feet.
Ha! That's nothing!
Oral looked down at him.
Oral was not aware murder was seen as mirthful.
Corin scrambled to his feet and composed himself.
I can explain this, I really can.
He looked at the droid. Can you tap into registry files from here?
I am fully capable of a whole host of functions in that regard.
Good. See if you can pull up the death files for the names and the reports about the murders, then match them up with birth bites. As the droid's eyelids started to flicker, Corin turned back to his squadron mates. The short form is this. At my Division of Corellian Security, CORSEC, we had an Imperial liaison officer with enough ambition to dream about being a Grand Moff and just enough talent for dealing with regs and bureaucracy to be a severe problem. He wanted us to bear down on all rebel smuggling in the Corellian system, but we were more concerned about hunting down the kind of pirates who actually hurt folks, glit smugglers and the like. Lure, that was the officer's name, threatened to bring us up on charges of aiding the rebellion.
My boss, Gil Bostra, decided to make up new identities for himself, my partner Ayala Wasiri, her husband Derek, and myself.
Then Gil and I made up the records for these smugglers, put out hints that they were very bad, and released reports that they'd been murdered. In a staged scene at the office, Gil accused me of having executed the smugglers, and I said I hadn't. We had what was supposed to look like a public falling out.
Lure assumed we never met with each other after that.
We did, and set things up so we could head away from the Empire.
Corin sighed.
Lure threatened me with a death mark if I ever got out of line. The Twi'lek looked at the droid.
Do you have the records, Imtray?
I do. They have birthbytes. Convert the time of their birth to military time. Reverse values for minutes and hours, then compare that to the birth date of the next person in alphabetical order. The droid made the calculations. There is a progression. Rizzotti patted Corrin on the shoulder. I'm happy to know you're innocent, but couldn't you have found something other than death to use to fool your imp? Well, when you're in Corsac, you have to joke about death because otherwise it grinds you down. Besides, watching Lure read those fictional reports and react to them was funny. Then he would find Gil Bastra's death file amusing, I take it? Corrin's jaw dropped open. What? There is a notice of Gil Bastra's death. It came when I asked for the data on the names in the report. That can't be. Oh, I'm afraid it is, sir. It was appended to Imperial Holonet transmission number A34920121. Corrin led the quartet from the briefing room. The route to their quarters took them out of the main complex, through a tunnel, to a smaller warren of rooms and suites. This rebel base had once been an extensive mine complex on the moon, Folor, in the Kominoa system. The site had been chosen because of the high level of shipping traffic that passed through it, and because of its proximity to Corellia and the core worlds. As they walked, the newest pilots in the legendary Rogue Squadron wondered aloud what their future missions might be. Rizzotti said, I think a lot of folks believe the whole rebellion was won when Vader and the Emperor died. I'm taking the revitalization of Rogue Squadron as a sign that at least Commander Antilles and Admiral Ackbar don't share that belief. The Twi'lek had thought a lot about what the New Republic might be planning.
By defeating the Emperor at Endor, the rebellion proved itself a legitimate power in the galaxy. Within a month after Endor, the Alliance's Provisional Council issued their declaration of a New Republic. Now, worlds joining the New Republic are doing so on their own terms, and those negotiations are far from joyous events. Princess Organa and the other diplomats have done more to strengthen the New Republic than the whole Katana fleet could do. Even so, there is a limit to what diplomats can accomplish.
Hence the reconstitution of Rogue Squadron, Corrin said.
I think so, Corrin.
Rizzotti frowned. What am I missing? Corrin jerked his head toward Nuwara. He's saying that the diplomats have pretty much mined all the ore they can find. The worlds who want to join us have, those who don't haven't, and those who aren't sure will need some convincing. Typhara, for example, is the source of 95% of the Bacta in the galaxy. They're neutral right now and making grand profits selling to all sides, but we want them in our camp. Putting two of their people, Jace and Arisi, in Rogue Squadron sends a message to the Typharans that we value them. The same goes for having a Bothan in the squadron.
And the unit is commanded by a Corellian, and has another Corellian pilot in it.
Nuwara tapped himself on the chest.
I'm either a token Twi'lek, or a token lawyer.
Rizzotti laughed. I'm a token refugee, I guess. Oral snapped a trio of fingers against his billet data card.
Oral is a token Gand.
Corrin smiled. So, if this unit is a symbol that's filled with symbols, the supposition is that we have to do something very symbolic to get more worlds to join the New Republic. You think you know what target will be coming up next, Nuwara?
It's only logical.
Both of the Twi'lek's headtails twitched in tandem.
Before too long, we'll be going after the biggest symbol of all.
A chill ran down Corrin's spine.
Coruscant?
The sooner it falls, the sooner the Empire falls apart.
As he began inspecting his X-Wing, Wedge Antilles tapped the underside of the smooth nose cone. Newly refinished. Good. He looked at the rows of TIE fighters, bombers, and interceptors painted on the side of his ship, symbols of the battles he had fought. Big Death Stars bracketed the collection of smaller ships on either side, and Sea Rook fighters started a new row above the red stripe bisecting the fuselage.
It has been a long fight, and will be longer still.
Behind him, Wedge heard the chittering voice of Zray, the meticulous Sorpine tech. Imtray translated. Master Zray apologizes for not being able to fit all your kills in a space allotted.
Each ship rendered in red is meant to represent a squadron worth of kills.
Wedge bowed his head to Sarai. It looks as good as new, if not better.
Wedge finished the inspection, then mounted the ladder to the cockpit for the next squadron exercise. He brought his systems up. All monitors and indicators came to life. Tycho, in traffic control, cleared him for takeoff.
Rogue One is clear for departure.
Once outside the atmospheric containment bubble, Wedge rocketed away from the craggy gray lunar surface, sending the fighter into a gentle arc toward the horizon. Punching up a tactical scanner, he saw 11 X-Wings and one Z-95 XD trainer, the benign version of the X-Wing's little brother. He switched his comm over to the tactical frequency he shared with Tycho. Everyone green and running, Tycho.
Affirmative. Systems a go.
Flipping the comm over to the frequency shared by the rest of the squadron, Wedge announced, "Today I want you all to do some basic work on the gunnery range. Laser targets have been set up to provide you a number of flying and targeting challenges. Your run will be graded for accuracy and speed, and if you get hit, you'll lose points. Any questions?" Horn's voice squawked through the helmet headset.
"Sir, our lasers are zeroed at 250 meters, which is a little short for ground attack missions."
"Then you'll have to be a very good shot, won't you, Mr. Horn?"
"Yes, sir."
Wedge smiled. "Good. Then perhaps you'd like to go first. Mr. Korg will fly your wing."
"Yes, sir."
The enthusiasm in Horn's voice matched the energy in the roll and dive his X-Wing executed.
"Sir."
The enthusiasm in Horn's voice matched the energy in the roll and dive his X-Wing executed. Wedge popped his comm over to Tycho Selku.
"Captain, you'll be getting a data feed from Rogue 9.
"It'll be interesting to watch. He's going in hot."
"That he is, Tycho. He wants to set a mark the others can't possibly hit.
I think he needs to learn a different lesson today." Corrin pulled out of his dive and skimmed the surface of Folor. He aimed the nose of his snub fighter at the paired mountains that marked the opening of the trench that served as a bombing range. A line of red lights burned on and off in sequence. Below him, the rims of countless craters flashed past. On the data screen, the mountains appeared in a light shade of green, and likely targets were red circles that began to blink when he had a clear shot at them. Whistler would turn the circles into diamonds if they proved to be hostile. The fighter shot into the trench. Tall, jagged walls rose on either side of him. Down in a valley, two red circles became diamonds, his cannons tracked, and lit up the first target, while laser fire from the GAN hit the second.
"Nice shooting, Ten. Two more targets. I've got them."
Korn climbed sharply to get at the first target, and shot it before its laser could shoot back at him. Rolling his ship to the left, he moved back to the center of the canyon, then finished the roll with an inside loop that brought him down to the second diamond. It hit him once before he took it out, but the shot did not penetrate his shield. Climbing back up, Korin arced around a corner in the trench, and took laser fire from two bunkers nearly a kilometer distant. Targets came fast and seemed to get more accurate the deeper he ran into the trench. Korin tapped his lucky charm, then forced himself to concentrate. Rolling his fighter, diving and climbing, he wove his way through the gunnery course. He didn't get every target he shot at, but fewer of them hit him. Coming around the last sweeping turn, he saw a narrowing of the canyon. Above the crevasse, four laser targets had a perfect field of fire for blowing any X-Wing out of the sky, but they couldn't shoot down into the split in the rock.
"Nine, you need to roll."
"Negative ten. It's wide enough. A meter to spare on each side."
"If you go dead down the middle."
"If I don't, I'll be dead."
Taking a deep breath, Korin focused on an imaginary point about 10 meters off the nose of his fighter and steered for that point. He kept in the middle of the crevasse, floating left and right as sections of the wall jutted out from one side or the other. Suddenly, the tight spot was behind him without his having left any paint on it. The wall streaked by, black and gray blurred together. Swooping up and out of the rock cliff, his X-Wing spat fire. He got three gunnery stations and Ural, threading his loop, tagged the last one. Commander Antilles' voice filled Korin's helmet.
"Very impressive flying, Mr. Horn. Your score is 3250 out of a possible 5,000. You can head back to base now. Consider yourself at liberty for the rest of the day."
Yeah, I was at liberty. Liberty to be humiliated. Muscles bunched at the corners of Korin's jaw as he ground his teeth. He'd waited in the hangar for the others to come back to base.
hoping to hear as Mark had stood through the rest of the exercise. He knew he was looking for congratulations on his great flying. Lujane Forge, a brown-haired pilot from Kessel, and her Rhodian roommate, Andoni Hui, had been the first to return. Lujane had been almost apologetic. I got 3,300, Corn. Andorny hit 3,750.
What?
Peshk Frisik and Ural came back together. The ruddy-furred Bothan took great delight in reporting a score of 4,200. The Gand had been very quiet, and when he finally spoke, he said,
Quirk scored 4,050.
That answer told Corin something very strange was going on. In calling himself by his family name, Ural had shown that he was ashamed of his score. He should have been ecstatic about it. Each pilot had scored better than Corin, and most had done so by over 1,000 points. On subsequent runs, I might score up in that range, he thought. But not the first time out. That's not possible. Unless... Corin jogged over to where Whistler had plugged himself into a recharging outlet. Whistler, at the start of our run, you set up a communications link with someone. Who? The droid's holographic projector began to glow. A miniature image of Wedge Antilles floated between them. You sent him my sensor data, right?
I know I didn't prohibit it.
The little droid shifted to a warning tone. The pilot turned and saw the rogue leader come through the MagCon bubble. Time to get some questions answered. He ducked beneath the nose of Wedge's X-Wing and snapped to attention as the commander descended the ladder. Do you want to speak to me about something, Mr. Horn?
Yes, sir. You gave everyone else my targeting data. I flew my heart out on that course. You let the others make a run based on the things I had done.
Wedge's brown-eyed gaze did not waver.
And?
And?
It's not fair, sir. I'm one of the best pilots in this squadron, but it looks like I'm the worst.
I see. Are you finished?
No.
Well, you should be. Or you can be. Do you understand me? The icy tone in Wedge's voice filled Corin's guts with frozen needles.
Yes, sir. You need to examine why you're here, Mr. Horn. You're part of a team, and you have to act like it. If I need you to shoot a trench like that and feed your data back to a Y-Wing squadron coming through, I'll have you do it. How good you are means nothing if the rest of the people in the squadron get killed. Today the others learned to use data from a reconnaissance flight to help them through deadly territory. You learned that you're not more important than anyone else in this squadron just because you're a gifted pilot.
The leader of the squadron tossed him a sharp salute.
You're dismissed, Mr. Horn.
Corin returned the salute and spun on his heel.
Mr. Horn!
Corin stopped. His hand rose in a salute.
Captain Selku.
The blue-eyed man returned the salute, then crossed his arms over his chest.
Still walking and talking?
Sir?
Either Commander Antilles is losing his touch and dressing down recruits, or you're made of sterner stuff than I might have imagined.
Corin's eyes narrowed.
I don't think the commander cut me any slack, sir.
Tycho held up a hand.
Forgive me, Mr. Horn. That did not come out the way I wanted. From your Corsac record and the way you excel in scenarios when you act alone, you have struck me as a loner.
Loners don't tend to like it when they're made to be a team player.
Corin frowned. I can work with others, but I know I can rely only on myself when things fall apart. I can't help that attitude because it kept me alive in tough times.
Tycho pointed toward the passage deeper into Fulor base, and Corin fell into step with him.
The problem with that attitude, Corin, is that it keeps others away. It makes it more difficult for them to help you when you need it. It keeps them uncertain that you will help them when they need you. Hey, I'll never leave a buddy in trouble.
I don't doubt that, but you define buddies on your terms. You were with the Corellian Security Force and spent a good deal of your time hunting down people who are now your allies. That transition isn't something you can make overnight.
It couldn't have been any easier for you, sir. You are an Imperial pilot.
Tycho did not answer immediately, and Corin sensed a window of vulnerability that had opened, then slammed shut.
Let's just say, Corin, that my situation was quite different from yours. Different time, different circumstances.
The truth he heard in Tycho's words cleared Corin's mind and punched through walls he didn't realize he directed.
You may be right, sir.
Tycho shook his head. Forgive the little lecture. I've had an unfortunate amount of time to think about this sort of stuff.